Welcome to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. Here's Connie.
Hi, I'm Connie Whitman, your host, and you're listening to Enlightenment of Change on webtalkradio.net. Thanks for joining me this week. Alrighty, my motivational quote today is by Brian Tracy, and he says, "Just as your car runs more smoothly when the wheels are in perfect alignment, you perform better when your thoughts, feelings, emotions, goals, and values are in balance." Wow, life balance. Is that something we've all been talking about for years? And I have to ask, has anyone found it yet? Or is it just one of those things that we kind of just dream about? You probably know someone that you view and you think they have it all, or they have it all together. Wouldn't you love to know what their secret is? So it actually is a possibility to have everything running in sync, or at least heading in that direction, because we've seen people living that way. Well, today you are in store for a great treat. My guest today is Michael Cohen, and Michael is affectionately known as Mukunda, and is dedicated to helping his clients and students find balance in all aspects of their life, emotional, spiritual, mental, and physical. Mukunda is a certified health coach, certified life coach, registered yoga teacher, and certified Vedic Thai yoga bodywork practitioner who works with others to help them restore balance in their lives by keeping them to make healthier and more conscientious lifestyle choices. So does my guest name, Mukunda, and there's more to it, I'll let him explain, sound like a synonym for balance? I think it does. So please help me welcome Michael Mukunda. And Michael, there's something after that, and I know I'm missing it, and I apologize.
Hey, Connie, how are you doing? Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
I'm very excited. I'm excited about our conversation today because I know everybody is looking for that balance. But you got to tell us the story about your real name is Michael Cohen, right?
My birth name is Michael Cohen. That's my family given name, correct.
Now, you've been adopted into a different name, which is Mukunda
Chandradas. So Das translates as servant. Chandra is the Sanskrit word for the moon, and Mukunda is the Sanskrit word for when God liberates you from material life.
How did you get that name? It's so cool.
Well, I come from the Orthodox tradition of yoga that is basically what's called bhakti yoga is what it is more commonly referred to, or if you're from the 60s and 70s, a Hare Krishna. I am part of that tradition. Yes, we are still alive and we are still growing. We are no longer in our airport days, and we're much more mainstream and much more established as a spiritual religion and a spiritual philosophy in yoga and Eastern philosophy. We're no longer people running around in robes. We still have that, but we're more like mainstream householders in a different form of devotion.
Very cool.
Right. And so in order to get an initiated name in the tradition of the bhakti yoga tradition, you have to spend a series of a couple years, depending on the person, but on average, anywhere from 3 to 5 years.
Wow.
Living a very spiritually mindful life where you basically get up in the morning, you do your yoga, then you do religious ceremony services, then you study sacred texts like the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavatam, and the Yoga Sutras. You do japa meditation for about an hour and a half every day, and you adhere to regulative principles in the bhakti yoga tradition, like you don't drink, you don't have illicit sex, you don't gamble, you maintain a vegetarian diet. And after a series of 3 to 5 years, when you follow this path and you're able to maintain it consistently, you get initiated. And when you get initiated, you get a spiritual name, and that spiritual name is what your guru or your teacher sees as your ideal self. Aww. Of what he sees your potential to be.
That's lovely. That's fascinating, but it's also so lovely because they kind of get to know you at your inner core, which is just amazing, you know, for someone to see you with you know, vulnerability and with everything revealed, right, of who you are at the inner self. That's really very lovely.
Yeah, and when you go on that journey to be get initiated, you do go through the rigmarole, because you are telling the universe that you choose to no longer be a material person trying to find spirituality. You're choosing to be a spiritual person living a material existence. And when you begin to go on that journey, the world or the universe, or in yoga we call Maya, begins to say, oh, you want to be a spiritual person? You want to be a servant of God? Let's see how you really want that. And it starts to throw things at you. At the same time, you're kind of cleaning up your karma. You're cleaning up all that like toxic behavior and negativity, and you're trying to like live a more spiritually mindful life. And unless you're like born into it, you have to kind of go through a period of cleansing, or in yoga we call it a kriya practice, where like you have to clean the body, you have to clean the mind, you have to clean the diet, and this all takes hardship. And like, it's like you're going through the fire, and then when you come out the other side, your life is a little bit more peaceful and a little bit more spiritually oriented. The only downside is then you have to then figure out how to be a part of the material world,
sure,
as a spiritual being. And sometimes what you do occupationally is no longer in line. And that's what happened to me. When I went through that whole like fire and brimstone to become initiated, I no longer fit into my professional job in real estate, marketing, finance, and I had to redefine myself of what I was going to do professionally.
I have two questions. First question is, your family, had they gone down this path before you? Like, were you brought up in this type of environment, or was this truly your choice through your own education and research and, you know?
No, I'm not what's called a gurukuli. I'm a first generation initiated yogi. So my parents were not part of the Gaudiya Vaishnav tradition or the Bhakti Yoga tradition. So when I first went on this journey, my parents were like, he's forming a cult. He's joining a cult. He's like shaved his head. He's given up all his worldly possessions. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Yeah, I have a shaved head, but I still have a job. I just don't eat animals anymore and I don't drink beer. What's the problem? And so, yeah, they went through a period of freaking out, because for a lot of Americans or a lot of Westerners, it's a very different culture. It's a more peaceful culture. We don't eat animals. We don't drink alcohol. You know, we limit television. And so when you go from one culture where you're, you know, spending your Saturdays with your family, drinking beers and eating buffalo wings, and Sunday golfing with your dad and then watching football, to going to yoga classes and eating carrots, you know, there's a little bit of a culture shock there. And so they went through that period of like, what happened to my son? Did he get brainwashed? To 10 years later, I'm really proud of you. You're an inspiration.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and, you know, truthfully, you know, disclaimer, they have every right to feel that way, because for all the good in yoga and all the good yogis, like all the good gurus, like my guru is one of those like good yogis. Like, he's like, you know, he's very enlightened. He's very kind. He never has asked anybody to do anything harmful. He's very respected and lives a high standard. For every one of him, there's dozens of gurus that brainwash people in a negative way. And there are tons of stories out there of people that have found a teacher to follow and like gone down this rabbit hole that has wrecked their life. So
yeah,
my family's concerns were valid.
Yeah, that was my second question. As a parent, you know, Michael, I totally get where your parents, looked and thought, what is going on, right? Are they brainwashing him? Because, you know, we see this on TV, right? Criminal Minds and all these other places that we've seen these weird episodes. So, yeah, I get it. I get why your parents thought that, dude.
but I'm also saying that even not even in television, but in life. I mean, like, I don't know if you're into yoga, but I'm into yoga also. And there's plenty of yoga teachers that because they can, you know, do a handstand in the middle of the room and, you know, they're a little bit calmer and peaceful and they're a little bit more assured of themselves and they look good in a, you know, with their shirt off or in a bikini, they manipulate people that are like in pain and going through a period of suffering, and they're like, follow me and I'll make you better. And they create this like cult-like following that causes a lot of harm for people. Yeah. And so, like, I was very lucky that I met a mentor. His name is Joshua Green, who was a professor at Hofstra University, and he worked at the UN, and he was very respected. And he was one of Prabhupada's original secretary disciples, and he's a scholar. And he mentored me in a very loving, fatherly way for me to find my spiritual path without judgment, and created a space for me that prevented me from going off the deep end, that helped me find my guru. But there's not a lot of Joshuas out there, which is why I came a life coach, because I was like, I want to pay that forward. He helped me so much during my period of pain and suffering and never took advantage of it. How beautiful is that?
And you just hit the nail on the head, Michael. I think why you clearly have chosen this path, because it was meant for what you need to do and what you need to share with people who are struggling. And let's face it, you know, you look around just driving to work and people are angry, and I don't know that they know why perhaps they're angry, but they certainly don't know how to navigate those feelings and create a peaceful life. And that's how I started my introduction, right? We talk about this balance, you know, this inner peace, and I think it escapes, it just escapes everybody. So why do you think, and let me do this first. Why do you think, even though, like you were saying, even before you went down this journey, you were working a corporate job, right? You had a car, you drank the beer, you ate the wings, you know, you watched the football, right? You had a life. Even though our basic human needs are met, why do you think we continue to suffer so? And that's what I was talking about with the anger, you know, driving to work and all of that. Why do we do that to ourselves?
Yeah, I know. For me, on paper, I had everything. I had a great job. Mm-hmm. I was making, you know, almost $250,000 a year. I had a nice apartment. I lived in a brownstone apartment in New York City. I had a good job. I was respected, and I was still like miserable, and I was still unhappy. And I believe it's because we live in a society of weapons of mass distraction.
Mm-hmm.
This is the culture that we live in today. It has never, ever been before, and we don't realize it. The world has changed so much in the last 100 years and has accelerated in the last 20 years. Never before in the history of the world do we have the resources we have for people to be connected all around the world instantaneously.
Yeah, yeah.
At the same time, you know, never have we ever been in a world where, as a society, and I don't even speak for Western society, I don't know why people are happy in other parts of the world, because I don't know what it's like to experience and grow up in a second world or a third world culture. I don't even know what it's like to grow up in a first world culture and live in a first world culture, which is like European nations, North America, Brazil, Japan, countries like that. Like, I only Israel, you know, I only know what it's like to grow up in
the U.S.
In the U.S., Canada, Europe type environments where, you know, we no longer as a society have to worry about where we get our food, if we're going to have electricity and heat, and is there a job for us? That is in our culture. Like, even people that are homeless in this country live better than anybody else in the rest of the world. But yet we still are unhappy because we are overworked and we are constantly comparing ourselves to other people. And as humans, You need to you're designed to compare and contrast yourself to other people, because how do you know if you're doing a good job?
Right.
Unless you compare yourself to other people. So we're told not to compare ourselves to other people, but yet in order to be successful, we have to compare ourselves to other people. But then because of that, we use that comparing ourselves to other people, whether we're doing a good job, as whether we're happy.
It's I call that the comparaphobia, especially with Facebook, because, you know, Facebook, I don't know why people don't realize, Michael, that Facebook is nothing more than the highlights of people's lives, right? Birthdays, trips, stuff like that. Yet we look at that and think, oh, they have the perfect life. Meanwhile,
they have the perfect life.
They don't, right? It's comparaphobia. It's what we do. And we are definitely overworked as a society. And the other thing you made me, I was giggling as you said it, that somebody across the world, we can know something the same time they do, right? With whether it's a
instantaneous.
And recently this topic came up, and I don't remember from what, but I will tell you, there was an earthquake many years ago, and I want to say it was in the DC area, and somebody back up here, now you're on the East Coast with me in Jersey, but somebody up here knew, we could feel it eventually in New Jersey, New York area. But whatever, when a tweet went out about this earthquake in D.C., we knew it before we even felt the earthquake. So think about that when we talk about instantaneous, right?
Right.
Crazy.
So, you know, right, great. And so, like, the reason why I think we're happy is we've never, ever had to worry. We've always, bulk of society, up until like the 1960s, man, even in the, you know, in 1960s, you were still like the Vietnam War was going on. So
right.
I'm going to say up until the 1980s, we was the first time where most people in Western cultures didn't no longer have to worry about surviving. So it was like, okay, now I can focus on trying to be happy. So how do I be happy? Well, I go on TV and I watch television where people drive these really nice cars and they seem happy. So I go, I need to have that car. Mm. Wait, I have that car now. I'm no longer happy, but I can't afford it. So I got to work more hours. Okay. So I'm not happy now. So what do I have to do? Oh, my neighbor just moved in and they bought a bigger house. So I need to get a bigger house. I'll be happy then too. So now I have a bigger house that I can't afford and I'm still not happy. And look, the thing goes on and on and on. And so we get in more and more debt. Mm. We force us to work more, and we don't realize that in order to find happiness, we can't look externally. We have to look internally.
And that's a tough lesson, Michael, to do that.
So hard.
Yeah.
Because every person on the news and every person screaming at the loud on the radio is telling you that it's everybody else's fault that you're not happy.
That's right. That's
it's
right.
The people that don't think like you. It's the people that don't look like you. It's the people that don't live like you. They're the reason why you're not happy. It's their fault. Because it's easier to sell, which is why we're so angry.
That's right.
Instead of going, why am I not happy? Why am I not happy? And how am I causing it? Because our realities are our own fault.
Hey, we have to take a quick break, but well said. You know, we love to deflect and blame the world. Look inside, because all your answers really are there. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we want to talk about you found your purpose in life, and I'm curious how you help your clients kind of shift so that they could start to find their purpose, perhaps. All right, but we'll take a break, and then we'll talk about that.
A speaker has little value to an audience unless you, the listener, is motivated and empowered to change. Connie Whitman of Whitman Associates is a renowned speaker and is an architect of change. Consultations, training, seminars, and speaking engagements are the venues where she affects change. Whether your responsibilities include customer service, sales, marketing, training, executive management, or ownership, and you are seeking change in your organization, then you need to hire Connie Whitman of Whitman Associates. Connie doesn't just fill your ears with rhetoric. She speaks to the heart and success of your business. So next time you need to hire a speaker, don't hire someone that just talks. Hire an architect of change. Connie Whitman. Just ask for Connie by calling 732-888-1420. That's 732-888-1420. Or email Connie@WhitmanAssociates.com.
We are back. We are speaking with Michael Cohen, and better, or lovingly, I should say, lovingly known as Mukunda, right? So, Michael, tell me what is our purpose in life, and how do you help your clients kind of navigate and figure that out? I don't know that everybody knows. That's why I ask.
Well, this is the other reason why people suffer, because they don't know what their purpose in life is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, nobody when they're a little kid wakes up and says, I want to be a drone, and just kind of wake up, go to work, come home, go to bed 5 days a week, watch crap on television, eat garbage, and then spend a couple hours on the weekend with my friends and family for 40 years, retire, and go die.
Yeah.
Like, nobody says that when they're a little kid. Everybody says things like, I want to be an astronaut, I want to be a lawyer, or I want to be an astronaut, I want to be the president of the United States, I want to be a football player, I want to be a ballerina, I want to be a firefighter. And then life kicks in and you realize that you can't maybe be a football player or the president of the United States or a famous actor. And so you settle in some crappy job. And not everybody is meant to be a chief. Most people are meant to be Indians. We all are meant to follow. Not everybody's meant to be the leader. What happens is you think you don't realize what makes you happy and what your values are. And some people, their values are to be home as much as possible. And so they try to get like this big house that they don't need. And then they're never home to be with their family, and so they're miserable in their job. And other people get jobs that they basically, like, some people become doctors because that's what their parents told them to do, but it's not what they really want. And so what I do, I start with by having them take a life assessment quiz. I call the Circle of Life, where they rate on a scale of 1 to 10. Whether they're happy in their home environment, their career, their social life, their relationships, their exercise, their diet, and a couple, there's some areas. And based on their score is the areas where we begin to unravel why they are not happy. And through that, we begin to set goals. And through that, we begin to discuss human needs. And through that, we begin to come up with an action plan to help them have a score in all areas of their life as a 10. But that doesn't mean that everybody needs to have, like, the perfect home environment. If your vision is to be like a brain surgeon, and that is your purpose in life, you're not going to be at home, you know, 5 hours every day at the end of the day. You're going to be home for 2 hours. But if that's your value and that's what you believe is okay, then that's perfect for you. You just need to find somebody in your life that matches your values. We all have to have our own kind of construct of what we think works for us. That's where we get balance from. It's not what we all have to live in the perfect, like, you know, leave it to beaver lifestyle. Some people's like version of balance is different from other people's versions. And when you begin to understand that, that's when you begin to understand your purpose and find fulfillment.
And I think I love what you said, Michael, because it really does start with looking inward, and you have a tool, right? The Circle of Life, the assessment, where we stop and actually assess and measure each of those, whatever those segments are, right? Or physical, you know, the spiritual, the mental, financial, all of those things, right? You have us kind of assess that. And then based on that, those aha moments is where we could start to change our path or create those goals. And then the action steps to support creating those changes or our goals. You know, it sounds so simple, yet it's not, it's easy to understand, not easy to execute. So I think that's why folks like yourself sharing your skill, right? Your skill of being able to help people navigate through these landmines, our own landmines that we create for ourselves. I think it's really important. And I think it's cool that you have this tool out there. So now you're really asking people to change. That's the core here. Assess yourself. Now let's look how we can change to create your awareness, but also to create the change you need to be happy, at peace, and all those things. So why is change and personal growth difficult? And why do you think most people fail at in achieving those dreams and their goals? They know what to do, but they fail at it. Why?
Oh, God. This is such a common question I get all the time. Change is so hard because of the people we surround ourselves with.
Mm. Tell me more.
I was like, pause for value bomb. So, so when I was 30 years old, I weighed 230 pounds. I smoked 2 packs of cigarettes every day. I had prescriptions for Adderall and Valium to work 100 hours a week. And I would be on Adderall all day long and then go home, drink a half a bottle of wine, pop a Valium or a Xanax and go to bed, get up at the crack of dawn, get on Adderall, work all day, 6 days a week. And I was miserable. And I was at a workshop in the city, and I forget which one it was, and it may have been like Landmark Forum, I don't remember. And somebody was talking about change. And basically the person said, you're not happy now in life because that's why you're in this room. And if you go through change, you're not going to be happy either. So what's the difference? Who cares? If you're not happy now, and if you go through change, you're not going to be happy because change is hard. Why don't you go through the hard part of changing, even though you're miserable during that process also? Maybe at the end, you'll come somewhere where you actually will be happy. So that's the first realization. You're not happy now. Change is not going to make you – you're not going to be happy during the process of changing. So you might as well change so then you can become happy. Make sense?
Yeah, I get that we're not happy now. The process of change isn't going to thrill us because it's a lot of work, right? It's hard. But then after I change, I will or won't be happy.
Who knows? Because there's no
It's a crapshoot, right? There's
it's
no,
a crapshoot.
Crap gotcha.
So it's like there's no formula. So nobody can tell you, like, if you do X, if you, it's like there's no manual to life where if you do X,
right,
like, actionable steps, you're going to be happy. And like that's like when anybody ever – whenever you go into any sort of personal growth seminar or you start working with a coach and the coach says, follow these 10 steps and you'll be happy, run in the opposite direction because you don't know. And anybody who tells you that they have the secrets is full of it. You have an idea. You have a blueprint. But it's not something that says must follow these steps because it's easy to sell the steps. It doesn't work. You have to take a little bit of pie A, a little bit of pie B,
yep,
maybe pie C, put it together into a salad, and that's your version of how you will become happy.
That's right.
The reason why change is so hard is because you and me and everybody in this world, as long as they are material beings and not spiritual beings, they identify their lives by three things. What they do at work, their community, and their family. And whenever one of those things, when one of those two things are out of balance, or then you are still okay. But when two out of those three things that are out of balance, that leads to suffering. And most people can't handle that. So if you have a strong family, but your job is in jeopardy, you're not going to be happy. Or you have a strong family and your community is and family and worker are in jeopardy, you're not going to be happy. So you as a person are connected to other people in this life either through family or community and job. So you, me, decide to change. I'm no longer happy. Let's use weight loss because that's an easy one to talk about. And I weigh 230 pounds. I have a decent 9-to-5 job, but I'm like heavy and I'm not happy and I want to lose weight. My family knows me as the heavy guy. You know, I'm Uncle Tony the Bear. And my friends, I'm the guy that goes out every night to drink beers and eat buffalo wings, watch football. And I'm the guy that you call up to go out and, you know, go to McDonald's with. And I'm the guy that's going to, you know, get pizza with you late at night. And I'm that guy for you. So I'm part of your community as the overweight guy, and I'm the family guy that's the overweight guy, and I'm the chubby guy at the office. And I decide to lose weight. And I start to I meet a life coach or a health coach that starts to help me with some healthy habits, and I start to go to the gym. Now I can't go out every night to go to the bar because I got to go to the gym and lose weight. And I can't be the guy that goes eats that pizza with you because I have to eat my I have to eat healthy. So now I'm threatening the community, and I'm losing weight. So now I'm threatening the family. So then they're going to pull. They're not secure in their lives. So they're going to feel threatened, and they're going to try to pull me down, not on purpose, but subconsciously. And that is the result of why change is so hard, because the people around us identify their lives based on who you are. So if you change, they're no longer going to be comfortable, because it takes a rare soul to invite change into their lives comfortably. And those are called change people. And that's not common.
It's so funny you say that, because, you know, we were speaking before taping the show, and I started a second business with a friend, and, you know, I just turned 56 this past November. And so people meet me and they go, like, why? Like, shouldn't you be slowing down? And I giggle, because in my head, my response is always, why not? I'm having the time of my life. But right. I stop and I think, you're asking me why, because maybe you're really asking yourself, why aren't you perhaps doing more? Why aren't you living the life that maybe you want or you try to choose? So, yeah, the people around us, I don't think they mean to pull us down. I agree with that. But they don't know any better either. And they sabotage us without even thinking about it. We're actually I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You got to flip it to the other side, though, too. You, through the change, is also going to force people out of your life. So if you start to lose weight and you start to become mindful of your diet, you are going to be better at work. So then your work, the people in your work are no longer going to treat you the same way. You might get a job promotion, or you might get a new job. So no longer part of that community. So, or if you start to lose weight and you go to the gym, maybe you start to run, or maybe you get into yoga. You're going to have a new set of friends that are going to be your running friends or your yoga friends. And then your friends that you go to the bars with, they're no longer going to be a part of your life. So then you're going to be like, I no longer have any friends because I'm losing weight and my friends don't want to hang out with me anymore because I'm no longer the fun guy that goes out on Tuesday nights till midnight. And my work colleagues no longer want to hang out with me because I no longer get cake at lunch on Thursday. So they don't want to eat lunch with me anymore because I eat like a salad. So they never invite me out to lunch. So now I'm lonely. It's both sides. It's not just the people that feel threatened by you. You also feel threatened because you are being forced to change your friends and change your relationships, even within the family.
It's true, Michael, and we're out of time, but I have to just say, I think that description, as you were saying it, I have pictured people that are no longer in my life, you know, for whatever reason, not good or bad, just they're not, and it's okay. But a lot of people can't deal with when people do come and go. They feel like, why did they leave me? Right. They have this, they lay this guilt on you. So just as you were describing it, I bet everybody can picture and envision someone that is no longer in their life that used to be, and how they feel, like you blew them off or in a negative way. It's just, humans, we are really, interesting, creatures. I just want to share, you guys, if you're interested in learning more about Michael and maybe working with Michael, and he could help you internationally. You know, we do have Skype and other, you know, methodology or tools out there, so he can help anyone across the world. Go to his website. It's yourwellnessyogi.com. I will post it on the Enlightenment of Change Web Talk Radio platform so you guys can find him easily. Michael, thank you so much for taking the time, but for just sharing some difficult topics, right, that we make us a little uncomfortable, but I think are really, really important. And you guys, if you need to reach me or you need my help from a business standpoint or a coaching standpoint or a sales standpoint, please reach out to me directly at Connie@WhitmanAssoce.com, and I will always respond personally. Again, if you are interested in finding out more about Michael or perhaps, you know, hiring him or just having a conversation with him to see if perhaps he can help you with some of the demons that you're fighting or choosing to make a change, right, in 2018, he's your guy. Go to yourwellnessyogi.com. And again, that will be posted. Michael, thank you so much for taking the time and for sharing some insights and good examples. I think good examples are helpful for us to understand.
Thanks, Connie. I appreciate it. And I hope everybody has a great day and, you know, happy 2018.
You said it, man. 2018 is going to be a rocking year for all of us. Thank you all for joining me. You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with me, your host, Connie Whitman, on webtalkradio.net. Please go and have a wonderful week and maybe find your purpose so you can find your peace and joy within. Thanks, everybody.
You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. To learn more about Connie, visit her website, WhitmanASSOC.com. Thank you for tuning in. We're glad you were here.